Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Chamuna Teravana Chari Chamuna Teravana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Kire Vardari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Kire Vardari Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana 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 Chamuna Teravana Chari Chamuna Teravana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Radhe Jaya Panchatattva 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 Jaya Panchatattva Jai Jai Prabhupada 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 Jaya Prabhupada
Om Shabhan Paranam Sipadviraj Kacharya Sotra Sata Sri Sri Mahadis Vain Grace Vaisa Bhaktananda Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Iskam Beauty Founder Shari Shri Prabhupada Ki Samvedi Gaura Bhakti Vrindi Ki Parantaraj Shumar Bhavagatam Ki Gaura Pramarandi Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnanan Janashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Garave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kada Mahyam Dadati Swapatantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sakrijatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindha Dinabandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
This morning reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 22 Bali Maharaj surrenders his life, Text 33
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Indrasena Maharaja Indrasena Maharaja Indrasena Maharaja Yahi Bho Bhadram Astute Yahi Bho Bhadram Astute Yahi Bho Bhadram Astute Sutalam Svargivip Prarthyam Sutalam Svargivip Prarthyam Sutalam Svargivip Prarthyam Gyatibhi Parivaritaha Gyatibhi Parivaritaha Gyati bi parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahi bho bhadramastute Sutalam swargi bi prarthyam Gyati bi parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahi Bho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargivi Prarthyam Gyati Bhi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahi Bho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargivi Prarthyam Gyati Bhi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahi Bho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargivi Prarthyam Gyati Bhi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibi Parivaritaha
Indrasena Maharaja
Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Gyahibo Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibhi Parivaritaha. Indrasena Maharaja Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibhi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibhi Parivaritaha Indrasena Maharaja Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibi Prarthyam Gyathibhi Parivaritaha Indrasena
O Maharaj Bali
Maharaja O King, Yahi, better go. Bho, O King, Bhadram, all auspiciousness. Astu, let there be. Te, unto you. Sutalam, in the planet known as Sutala. Swargibhi, by the demigods. Prarthyam, desirable. Gyatibi, by your family members. Parivaritaha, surrounded. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation, O Bali Maharaj, Indrasena, now you may go to the planet Sutala, which is desired even by the demigods. Live there peacefully, surrounded by your friends and relatives. All good fortune unto you. Please repeat, O Bali Maharaj, Indrasena, now you may go to the planet Sutala, which is desired even by the demigods. Live there peacefully, surrounded by your friends and relatives. All good fortune unto you. Purport. Bali Maharaj was transferred from the heavenly planet to the planet Sutala, which was hundreds of times better than heaven, as indicated by the words Svargibhi Prarthyam. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead deprives his devotee of material opulences, this does not mean that the Lord puts him into poverty. Rather, the Lord promotes him to a higher position. The Supreme Personality of Godhead did not ask Bali Maharaj to separate from his family. Instead, the Lord allowed him to stay with his family members. Gyathibhi Parivaritaha. Indrasena Maharaja Yahibho Bhadramastute Sutalam Svargibhi Prarthyam Gyathibhi Parivarita. O Bali Maharaj Indrasena, now you may go to the planet Sutala, which is desired even by the demigods. Live there peacefully, surrounded by your friends and relatives. All good fortune unto you. This verse, Lord is directly speaking to Bali Maharaj. Previously, he was replying to Lord Brahma and the assembled demigods and everyone present there. Now he's specifically speaking to Bali Maharaj and blessing him. He's blessing him with the planet Sutala, which is Swargibi Pratyam. Even the demigods desire Sutala. And he's further blessing him that he'll be able to live there peacefully, surrounded by his friends and relatives. And he's blessing him with all good fortune. So Bali Maharaj has been through great tribulation in the last few chapters, having everything stripped from him. But having passed that test, the Lord, being very pleased with him, is now bestowing benediction upon Bali Maharaj. Very great benediction. Personally, if the Lord says all good fortune unto you, then you know that you'll definitely get all good fortune. If someone else blesses, it may or may not happen. But when a pure devotee blesses, or the Supreme Lord himself blesses, then there's no doubt that that blessing will come true. And of course, to secure that blessing, Vamanadeva has promised that he will reside along with Bali Maharaj at Sutala. He's not simply abandoning him or dismissing him, but the Lord himself will personally be living along with Bali Maharaj as his watchman, his gatekeeper. It was mentioned previously also that once Ravan wanted to conquer the universe, so he came to Sutala. He also wanted to conquer Sutala. So there are different narrations what happened at that time. One narration is that when he came to fight with Bali Maharaj, Lord Vamanadeva kicked Ravana and sent him flying hundreds of miles away. And Ravana was wise enough not to try again. So in that way, Bali Maharaj was saved. And there's another version where Ravana comes to Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj tells him, if you want to fight with me, first you should go and go over there and see that pile of gold. And Ravana goes and sees this huge mound of gold. And Bali Maharaj tells him, you pick it up. And he wasn't able to lift it. So that's Hiranyakashipu's earring, my great-grandfather's earring. So if you're not even able to pick up that, don't think about trying to fight with me. So Ravana again got the message and didn't disturb Bali Maharaj. So here, the real blessing on Bali Maharaj is that the Lord will be present at his planet Sutala. He's blessed him with the opulence of Sutala. He's blessed him to live peacefully. He's blessed him to be along with his family members. And he's blessed him with good fortune. But the ultimate fortune is to have the association of the Lord. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is a passage where Prahlad Maharaj is talking. And he's trying to deny his pure devotion. The first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a search for the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. So Narad Muni is going to various devotees and asking them or glorifying them. And standard response from each of the great devotees is that they deny that and they direct Narad Muni to someone who has received more mercy from the Lord. So Prahlad Maharaj, he says, you know, someone might say that the Lord was merciful upon my descendants like Bali Maharaj, but actually the fact is that the Lord is staying there at Sutala just to keep Bali Maharaj captive so he can't escape and cause trouble again in the universe. So he's denying the mercy of the Lord upon Bali Maharaj. And both Bali Maharaj and Prahlad in different occasions, they take their birth in the demoniac family of Hiranyakashipu's dynasty to mean that they're unqualified and they're not real devotees. They're not able to have proper devotion because they're born in demoniac family and surrounded by demons. So this is the nature of Vaishnava, to always consider his own glories to be insignificant or even impediments in the discharge of devotional service. Bali Maharaj also appears later on in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto. We don't know so much what Bali Maharaj's activities were for all these yugas when he was living in Sutala, but he reappears in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. which is described by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book. This is chapter 85. So chapter 85 of Krishna book, then Vasudeva is offering prayers to the Lord and Krishna is reciprocating with those prayers. And then Devaki also approaches the Lord. And she heard that when Krishna was in Gurukul, he, as Guru Dakshina to Sandipani Muni, he returned Sandipani Muni's son, who had drowned in the ocean. Krishna brought him back to Sandipani Muni as Guru Dakshina. So Devaki was thinking about her sons. As we know, her six sons' babies were killed by Kamsa while they were imprisoned in Mathura. And she's thinking, if Krishna could bring back Sandipani Muni's son, then surely he can bring back my children also. So she requests Krishna, please can you, just once at least, I want to see my children who were killed at birth. I have desire, that maternal instinct was there. She wanted to see those children again. So Krishna, of course, he immediately agreed. So he set out to Sutala. Those six children were living with Bali Maharaj at Sutala. So there's a nice description how Krishna and Balaram, they both go to Sutala, and Bali Maharaj is living there. When he sees that Krishna and Balaram have come, he's overcome with ecstasy. And he receives them very nicely. He washes their feet, sprinkles the Charanamrita all over himself and his family members, and he offers very nice prayers. He gives a very nice reception to the Lord with ornaments, garments, chandan, lamps, betel nuts, and food. He offers everything that he possesses. Again, he offers everything he possesses to the Lord. He was grabbing the feet of the Lord and keeping them on his chest, keeping them on his head. He's overcome with ecstasy to see the Lord Krishna again, in directly in his palace. He started to choke up, he started to cry. He offered many different prayers. And again here, he says, we belong to the daitya, or demon category. It's very difficult for the living entities to see you, but if you're merciful upon them, then they can see you. Especially, you have come here out of your causeless mercy, because we are influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. We belong to the demon category. The demons, yakshas, rakshasas, pishachas, even adds the gandharvas, siddhas, vidyadharas, charanas, ghosts, hobgoblins, are by nature incapable of worshipping you or becoming your devotees. But out of your causeless mercy, some of us have become pure devotees. Speaking of himself and Prahlad. So it's also interesting to know what does he pray for from the Lord. He says, my only prayer is that I should simply remember your lotus feet birth after birth. My ambition is that I may live alone just like the Paramahamsas who travel here and there in great peace of mind, simply depending on your lotus feet. I also desire that if I have to associate with anyone, may I only associate with your pure devotees and no one else. So when I read this, it was kind of interesting to contrast it with today's verse. Here the Lord is blessing him, live with all your family members peacefully, your friends and relatives. But later on, after a few yugas, when Bali Maharaj meets Krishna, and he's praying for, may I be alone. May I be like a Paramahamsa and travel incognito on the earth, living under different trees. And if I have to associate with someone, I'll only want to associate with your pure devotees. So it's an interesting contrast between the blessing given by the Lord, live with your family, and Bali Maharaj's prayer later, I just want to be alone. Of course, you know, many hundreds of thousands of years have passed, so perhaps now Bali Maharaj is ready to give up his family. And also, if you consider who were Bali Maharaj's family members, that may also shed some light on this prayer of his. Of course, Bali Maharaj's son, we know, is Banasura, who did not follow his father's footsteps and becoming a great devotee of the Lord. He was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he actually opposed the Lord. He imprisoned Krishna's grandson Aniruddha, and he fought with Krishna with all his armies and Lord Shiva's help, and the Lord defeated him and cut off his, he had 1,000 arms by blessings of Lord Shiva. Krishna cut off all his arms except four, but he didn't kill him, because Nrisingadev actually had promised Prahlad that I won't kill any of the demons born in your family. So all the descendants of Prahlad Maharaj were protected, including Banasura, even though he was demoniac. So Banasura is the son of Bali Maharaj, I presume Bali Maharaj is not very pleased with his opposition to Lord Krishna. Bali Maharaj surrendered everything to the Lord, whereas Banasura, he fought against the Lord. And there's also a description in Garga Samhita and Brahmavivarta Purana of Bali Maharaj's daughter, whose name was Ratnamala. And it's a very interesting little anecdote. It's actually described in the story of Putana, that when Vamanadev first appeared in the assembly of Bali Maharaj, you know, everyone was attracted to him, including Bali Maharaj's daughter, Ratnamala. She thought, oh, such a beautiful child. I wish he could be my child. I would be his mother. I would love to feed him. So she had that maternal feelings towards Lord Vamana. So the Lord, you know, she didn't express that, but the Lord in everyone's heart, he knows their desires. So he blessed her. Yes, you can be my mother. And generally the story continues that when Bali Maharaj took everything away from, when Vamana took everything away from Bali Maharaj, then his daughter, Bali Maharaj's daughter, had some antagonistic feelings towards the Lord. So therefore, in later birth, she was Putana, who had simultaneously maternal opportunity to give maternal service to the Lord by feeding, by nursing Krishna, but at the same time, she had the desire to kill the Lord. So this is how the story is generally told. I was trying to find the exact verses that describe this, but the first part was there, the slokas are there in Brahmavivarta Purana, that she had the maternal instinct, but her desire to kill the Lord, it wasn't explicitly mentioned, so I'm not 100% sure what the reference for that is, but that's how it's generally told. But I think it's important to clarify that, at least I wasn't able to find the exact reference. But logically it does make sense. Putana came, or Bali Maharaj's daughter became Putana, she had the opportunity to nurse Krishna, but also had the evil intention. Of course, ultimately, Krishna, being very merciful, he offered her the position of an eternal mother. So, again, Bali Maharaj's family, his son was Banasura, his daughter became Putana. So, after hundreds of thousands of years, it appears that he has had enough of family life and he wishes to simply roam as a Paramahamsa. So the Krishna book story continues. After offering prayers, he asks, you know, what can I do for you? And Krishna says, these six sons, these six sons of Devaki, they were previously the six sons of Marichi, the great sage. So how did they end up as being killed by Kamsa? And I think in the third canto it's described how Lord Brahma, in the beginning of creation, he created everybody, so he also created a beautiful girl. And although she was his daughter, he was attracted to her. And the six sons of Marichi were critical of Lord Brahma for that. You know, I mean, quite naturally, that would be, even today, is considered a very heinous kind of sin to be attracted to one's own child. So the six sons of Marichi, they criticized Lord Brahma for that. But at the same time, personalities like Lord Brahma are not judgeable, you know, by ordinary people. There's a verse, Tejiya Sam Nadosha Yet. There is no fault for the great personalities. So because of their criticism of Lord Brahma, they were cursed. Or rather, it was their karma to... they became sons of Hiranyakashipu, and later they were born as sons of Devaki and killed at birth. So Krishna asks Bali Maharaj, these six children, I guess, they appeared as children to Devaki. These six children are living here, so I want to take them back to my mother. Similarly, of course, Bali Maharaj brought the six personalities and Krishna Balaram took them back to Devaki. And actually, there's a painting in the back of the temple where this pastime is depicted. There are six boys of different ages and Devaki is reunited with them and Krishna Balaram are looking on. So, although so many years had passed, Devaki was feeling so much ecstasy seeing her long-lost babies that she was able to nurse them, all six of them. And because they drank the breast milk of Devaki, which previously was drunk by Krishna, immediately they all got liberated from their whatever bad karma they had still, they were still enjoying or suffering, and they went back to their post as sons of the great sage Marichi in the heavens. Prabhupada describes this. The milk from the breast of Devaki was transcendental nectar because the same milk had been sucked by Lord Krishna. As such, the babies who sucked the breasts of Devaki, which had touched the body of Lord Krishna, immediately became self-realized persons. The babies therefore began to offer their obeisances unto Lord Krishna, Balaram, their father Vasudev, and their mother Devaki. After this, they were immediately transferred to their respective heavenly planets. So this is an interesting pastime between the Lord, Bali Maharaj, Devaki, and the six children. So we've been hearing how Krishna took everything away from Bali Maharaj, and of course in these verses now Krishna is giving him benediction and facilities and opulence. So generally we do, you know, we focus on the Lord takes away everything, but also the Lord can very easily bestow great benediction upon his devotees. And I was reminded of when Krishna entered Mathura, he seemed to be in a very benedictive mood, you could say. Krishna entered Mathura, it was the first time he'd been to Mathura, and he's along with all the gopas. So it's like the village boys are coming to the city for the first time. I'm very excited to see the huge buildings and wide roads and opulence of Mathura. If you take a country boy and take them to, you know, New York or somewhere, even Calcutta, there are many villagers around here, they've never even been to Calcutta. And going to Calcutta is like a scary experience because there's so much activity, so many people, so many cars, so many buildings, you know, it can be overwhelming. So Krishna and Balaram, when they entered Mathura, they were really the talk of the town. For so many years, the residents of Mathura had been hearing about the activities of Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. And now they finally actually got to see Krishna and Balaram in person. So the whole city was like in an uproar. All the ladies were rushing to the roofs to come and, you know, to have darshan of Krishna and Balaram. And all the brahmanas and other men were coming to offer, make offerings, present themselves, present their offerings and gifts to the Lord. And Krishna and Balaram were just wandering through the streets, admiring everything and doing as they pleased. So the first person they encountered was this washerman, who was actually Kamsa's washerman. So Krishna saw him carrying all these wonderful clothes. He was on his way to Kamsa's palace. And Krishna very politely said, "Oh, my dear sir, you have such nice clothes. If you offer them to us, I'll bless you with all good fortune." And Krishna spoke very politely, very nicely, but this washerman was very rude. And because he was an associate of Kamsa, he was also demoniac. And he started to instruct Krishna and Balaram that you shouldn't ask for property of the king, otherwise you'll be arrested and punished. And Krishna was very upset with his rude behavior, and simply with his hand, he struck off the head of the washerman, and then helped himself to all the clothes, and the gopas also took all the other clothes that were left, and continued on their merry way. Then there was a weaver, or a tailor, who came and dressed Krishna very nicely with those clothes. So Krishna offered him all benediction. He offered the same opportunity to the washerman, but the washerman turned him down, and he was executed on the spot. Whereas the weaver, he dressed up Krishna Balaram very nicely, and Krishna blessed him with all good fortune. Said, "You'll get Sarupya Mukti. At the end of your life, you will get a form just like mine. And as while you're living, you'll be opulent and able to enjoy all kinds of sense gratification." So he got both. You know, generally devotees, okay, we pray for pure devotion, and materially we may or may not be in a very good situation. But Krishna was just giving benedictions like this. You can get liberated after this life, and during this life you'll be happy as well. Then he met the florist, Sudama, not to be confused with Sudama Brahmana, but the garland maker. So he welcomed Krishna and Balaram to his house, and he offered his prayers. He said, "I just want your causeless service, birth after birth." And he offered very beautiful garlands and flower ornaments to Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna also blessed him with pure devotion and a very happy, prosperous, opulent family life. Now, so he was giving both material benedictions and spiritual benedictions. Then he moved on further along the road. He met Kubja. And Kubja was also Kamsa's maidservant. She was taking chandan for Kamsa. And Krishna stopped her. And she was a hunchback lady, and, you know, bent over. And Krishna started to joke with her. "Oh, you're a very tall, beautiful woman. Who are you taking this chandan for? I'm sure if you offer to us, it'll be much better for you. And Kupcha, she was much more intelligent than the washerman. She immediately agreed, and she smeared Krishna and Balaram's body with the sandalwood paste. And then Krishna, he didn't just say something or offer some blessings, but he actually put his foot on her foot and caught her chin and jerked her upwards. And suddenly her hunchback was gone, and she was very tall and beautiful by the touch of the Lord. You know, by now Krishna, he's taken Kamsa's clothes, he's taken Kamsa's chandan, and he's killed Kamsa's washerman, he's blessed Kamsa's maidservant. He's more or less kind of just messing up all of Kamsa's plans. You know, you can imagine Kamsa sitting in the palace, his clothes didn't come that day, and his chandan didn't come that day. The next news he gets is that Krishna's destroyed the bow of Lord Shiva and killed all his guards. The whole excuse for inviting Krishna and Balaram to Mathura was to kill them on the pretext of this Dhanur Yajna, some great sacrifice being performed by Kamsa. He had in his possession Lord Shiva's bow, a very special, you know, special kind of maha, Lord Shiva's bow. So Krishna and Balaram went to see the bow, and it was like, don't touch, we have the signs here, please don't touch, Krishna full tulibinna, and things like that. But Krishna and Balaram don't pluck Krishna's flower. The signs, they're still there. They used to be in the gardens here. So it's like that, you know, the bow is an exhibit. No one should touch it. It's a special artifact. And there's security there also to prevent anyone from touching it. But Krishna and Balaram just pushed their way through. Krishna picked up the bow, strung it, pulled the string, and just shattered the bow on the spot. So all the security guards were very angry. They came to kill Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram just with the bow, the broken pieces of bow, just smashed them all to pieces. Kamsa heard the noise in his palace miles away, and he was very fearful. He sent some soldiers to also investigate and to punish whoever had broken the bow, and Krishna Balaram killed them also very, very easily. So Prabhupada describes in Krishna book, the whole Mathura was coming to offer their respects and their prayers and their gifts to Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna was simply, you know, doing as he pleased, not caring for the law and order of Kamsa. And of course, the very next day, we know how Kamsa was destroyed, killed personally by Krishna in the arena. So, anyway, the point I was trying to emphasize was that in this pastime, Krishna is also very freely giving benediction, not just spiritual benedictions, but even material benedictions to Kubja. You know, suddenly her body is straight and beautiful, just like we heard the story of Sadama the other day, that when he entered the palace, his body also changed. Transformation, just on the spot. You know, sometimes you see these ads, medical ads, like, you know, do this operation and you'll become, you know, very handsome, plastic surgery, or you're losing your hair, so use this oil before and after. They show a photo of the, you know, guy bald, and then suddenly he has hair again. Or use this cream, you know, it'll change your complexion and all the men or women will be attracted to you. But Krishna is actually doing it on the spot. Sadama entered his palace, suddenly his body was beautiful. He just pulled Kubja up, suddenly her body is, you know, straight and wonderful. Oh, so this is the real kind of before and after. Surrender to Krishna and you'll become blessed in every way. So this pastime of Lord Vamana and Bali Maharaj is winding up here. There's one more chapter, next chapter. Tomorrow will be the last verse of this chapter, and then next chapter is some winding up events of this pastime, and then the eighth canto will continue. So Jayadev Goswami has sung about this pastime in his Dashavatar Stotra. It seems that Jayadev Goswami is the person who has singled out these 10 incarnations as the Dashavatar. As we know, the Lord's incarnations are unlimited, but at least in his estimation, these 10 incarnations are very special, so he composed this song, the Dashavatar Stotra, about the 10 incarnations, Matsya Kurma, etc. So for Lord Vamana, he sang, Chalayasi Vikramane Balimadbhuta Vamana
ಪದನಕ ನಿರಜನಿತ ಜನ ಪಾವನ ಕೇಶವಧೃತ ವಾಮನ ರೂಪ ಜಯ ಜಗದೀಶ ಹರೇ.
ಸೊ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ವರ್ಡ್ ಇಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಛಲ. Chala means trick. Already Vamana himself has admitted that I tricked Bali Maharaj into giving everything to me. So Lord Vamana is glorified for tricking Bali Maharaj. And the other special, at least in the song that he emphasizes, is that the toe of the Lord has brought the Ganga into this universe. So Ganga Devi is the Charanamrita of Lord Vamana Dev. So the two main aspects of the pastime, according to Jayadurga Goswami, is tricking of Bali Maharaj and of bringing the Ganga down to this planet, or this universe, and ultimately it came down to the earth planet also.
Chalayasi vikkamane balimadbhuta vamana padanakanira janita janapavana.
The celestial Ganges has washed the nails, on the toenails of the Lord. So it's the moving Charanamrita, live Charanamrita of the Lord. The last time I spoke, mentioned the Yasyaham Anugrinami verse, which has been many times cited in this pastime. And I also came across the verse after that, where Krishna is saying that when, after I take everything away from the devotee and his friends and family reject him, then the next thing that happens is that he becomes frustrated in his attempts to make money and instead befriends my devotees. Then I bestow my special mercy upon him. So I wanted to speak a little bit more about this verse in relation to Srila Prabhupada, because Prabhupada many times would quote the Yasyaham verse in his own, citing it as him having experienced the Lord taking away all his wealth. And therefore his family also were not very happy with Srila Prabhupada in his Grihastha Ashram days. So I've been reading up a little bit about, you know, what was like the events leading up to and after Srila Prabhupada became a vanaprastha, you know, when he left his family for good. For his business, you know, many times Prabhupada was coming and going. He was living in Allahabad and he went to Bombay to do business. He was traveling all over North India getting orders of his medicines. Later on he moved his family back to Calcutta and he was still living in Allahabad. He had a business in Lucknow, then he moved to Jhansi to start his League of Devotees. So Prabhupada was traveling a lot, so he was often not at home. So when Prabhupada was in Jhansi, he was trying to purchase the building for his League of Devotees, and he wasn't able to raise the money. He was actually very destitute, you know, he didn't have any money. Even his last factory in Lucknow was robbed. Actually, the employees stole everything and ran away. And Prabhupada's servant informed him, and Prabhupada just laughed and quoted the verse, Yasyaham Anugrinami. Krishna took it away. 7,000 rupees worth of goods, which is a huge amount in, you know, 1950s. So Prabhupada had no money to buy this building. So he thought, well, the only way I know how to make money is my business, so maybe I should start it up again. So he went back to Calcutta. And at first he didn't stay with his family, he stayed with some godbrothers in a small ashram. But he started visiting his family again. He would give classes there. All the neighbors and friends would come and Prabhupada would give, you know, Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class. And for years this had been going on. His family, his wife especially, was not interested. She wouldn't come. She wouldn't attend. She would stay in a separate room and she would drink her tea. And Prabhupada was very disturbed by this tea drinking. You know, it's not a Vaishnava habit. Although his wife was from a devotee family, she started to drink tea and she was getting addicted to tea, and Prabhupada wasn't able to convince her to stop. So eventually Prabhupada was, you know, very upset. And one day what happened is that Prabhupada's wife, Radharani Deh, she ran out of tea biscuits. You know, Indians like to dip biscuits in their tea. So she ran out of tea biscuits. So she went to the market and she exchanged Prabhupada's Bhagavatam for an equal amount of tea biscuits. You know, for her it was just a book. Oh, I need some tea biscuits, what can I get? Oh, here, a book. And so she took it to the market, they weighed it. There's that system was there, weighing paper or anything. And whoever the shopkeeper gave her some tea biscuits. And Prabhupada came back looking for his Bhagavatam, said, where's my Bhagavatam? And she very nonchalantly told him, oh, I exchanged it for tea biscuits. And Prabhupada was just stunned. You know, that was like the breaking point for him. He'd been detaching himself from his family for a long time, but that was the last straw. And he said, okay, you know, that's it. He just had the sudden realization, I'm done with this family. And he spoke about this himself. You know, some of my children were not married. You know, that's the duty of the father. I wanted to get them married before I completely break off the family relations. But after that incident, he wasn't interested anymore. He said, when someone dies, they generally say that, oh, God will take care of the family. So this is as good as dying. I'm leaving. I'm Vanaprastha Sannyas line now, which is civil suicide, is considered. So if I'm not in the picture, Lord will take care. If I were to die, Lord will take care. If I'm leaving, Lord will have to take care. So he just left, and he didn't even have enough money to go back to Jhansi. He was wondering, where should I go? And he remembered some other god brothers had a small temple nearby. So he borrowed 10 rupees from a friend. He didn't even have 10 rupees. Borrowed 10 rupees from a friend and went, took a train to that ashram and stayed there a few days. He was just doing intense bhajan, chanting all day. And you know, eventually, after a few days of inner purification, detachment from his family, because he wasn't going back ever again. And then he decided, okay, let me go back to Jhansi once more, try again. And he had a deity of Gauranga who took with him. Ultimately, the Jhansi chapter didn't work out. Prabhupada tried to get his godbrothers interested. He went to Vrindavan, he approached some of his godbrothers, maybe you would like to come with your disciples and take over this Jhansi project. But they weren't interested. Keshav Maharaj actually came with some disciples, they did some programs there. But it was too remote a place. Keshav Maharaj went back to Mathura. And Prabhupada decided, I can't fight here. You know, the governor's wife wanted to take over the building for some ladies' institution. And Prabhupada was alone. Had a few friends, but they didn't have the means to fight against the governor. So Prabhupada said, okay, Krishna's taking this away too. I'm done. So what he did, he went back to his godbrothers. Just as Krishna says in the verse, when that person takes shelter of my devotees, so in this case Prabhupada took shelter of his godbrothers' institutions. He lived for some time in Mathura, some time in Delhi. He was helping them with their editorial work. But ultimately, he was, nothing seemed to work out, and he was alone again, sitting in Vrindavan. But without getting into all the details, we know how Prabhupada's burning desire to serve his spiritual master's instruction, to preach in English, it was manifest first as Back to Godhead magazine, Prabhupada trying to preach in India to the intelligent class of people, the English-speaking people. Ultimately, it led him to go to America. You may have heard just a few days back, Gopal Agarwal, who was the original sponsor of Prabhupada's visa in America, he passed away. In 1965, Prabhupada stayed with him in Butler, Pennsylvania. About 10 years back, there was like a festival there. We actually attended that, where devotees from New Vrindavan, it's not so far from New Vrindavan, some devotees in Nitai Prabhu, he found, like looked up Gopal and Sally Agarwal. They still lived nearby Butler, not in Butler, but some nearby town. So they invited them, and many devotees came, Radhanath Maharaj, Rasaya, Varshana Maharaj, maybe 50, 60 devotees. And Gopal and Sally Agarwal came, and they were showing us, you know, we used to live in this place, this is where Prabhupada was staying, this is the YMCA where Prabhupada had his room there, this is the park where Prabhupada used to walk to come to our house. And Sally Agarwal had like original letters that Prabhupada had written to her from the 60s. You know, she was actually really thrilled, you know, like a celebrity. Because all the devotees were like, wow, this is amazing. You know, just like a American housewife, middle-aged, even, you know, elderly actually by that time. But she was really enjoying the attention and sharing stories about Prabhupada. So it was a very nice kind of festival in Butler, Pennsylvania, small little town, middle of nowhere. And somehow that's where Prabhupada first landed up in America. So Gopal Agarwal recently passed away just a few days ago, and the devotees attended his funeral service. But then, as we see here in Bali Maharaj's pastime, Krishna blessed him after he surrendered himself. You know, Bali Maharaj is the emblem of surrender. Sarva Svatma Nivedana Balira Bhut Krishnaptire Shampara. He's the emblem of surrender. So the Lord bestowed upon him all his mercy and opulence. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada's life, he went through many, many years of hardship, and then, by grace of the Lord, by his hard endeavors, he was able to establish ISKCON, and then, you know, he had so much facility by his preaching efforts. So we can see that if we are able to, even in the midst of very difficult circumstances, if we're able to maintain our devotion and surrender to the Lord, then the examples are there that the Lord will bestow his mercy upon us. So we can take inspiration from the lives of these great devotees like Pali Maharaj and more recently Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for your attention. If there's any question or comment, we can try to discuss or we can end here. Yes.
Prabhuji, why would, if one is surrendered and one came to the point of self-realization, why would Krishna fulfill his previous desires, which would have already been fulfilled when he self-realized?
It seems that Krishna is just in a very, you know, benedictive mood. He, like even Dhruva Maharaj didn't even want to get the opulence of, you know, the opulent kingdom that he sought. He actually said, oh, I saw you, that's enough. But Krishna was in a very happy mood, wanted to give him benediction, so he gave him that also. You know, we can't really question why, but Krishna wants to give something, then we accept it, you know, with grateful heart. If Krishna takes it away, we have to accept that. If Krishna gives us, we have to accept that. In either situation, we have to be fixed in our devotion, not too overjoyed if we get something pleasing, or too, you know, disappointed if something difficult, some challenge occurs. So Prabhupada also, when he got all his opulence is gone, he didn't change his habits, he didn't, you know, start to demand things, he didn't live an opulent life. He was still very simple and in his habits and his eating. He just maintained. So it's up to Krishna what he wants to give us or what he wants to take away from us. The devotee's focus should be only on the Lord. In either situation, we have to not be disturbed or excited or disappointed. We simply continue on with our service. I don't know if there's any other reasons. Krishna doesn't need to, but he wanted to bestow benediction upon Bali Maharaj. He wanted to bestow benediction on these washer, you know, the florist and Kubja, and you know, Krishna was in a happy mood. He gave. This is what people are after generally. People go to the temples, they pray for material things. Now Krishna's used to being pestered. So many people praying every day, give me money, give me health, give me, you know, opulence, whatever. But that's not the real benefit that we can get from the Lord. Those things are just by the way. Not important. We can see the pure devotees, when they pray to the Lord, they pray for his service, they pray for his darshan, they don't pray for material things. Krishna may give them or not give them, but what they're interested in is the Lord, his service, spreading the glories of his holy name, getting association of his devotees. That's what actually the pure devotees are praying to the Lord for. I don't know if that answers your question. Okay, thank you. Oh, yes, one more.
Thank you very much for beautiful class. Actually, once I remember so many years ago, 93, 94 something, one couple came who were the Prabhupada disciple. I remember the Mataji name, Her Grace Mandakini Mataji.
Mandakini?
Mandakini Mataji. Mm. She, I think they are in Australia, and there, I think her husband was the painting. He was doing a lot of very beautiful painting, and they were selling. They were coming to Middle East. So that time I was in Middle East. So that time she was telling that because she was having the desire since childhood that she wants to go different countries. But her salary was not that much good. She was not able to save the money. And later on, I think when she joined the SCON, then I think because she married to, I think her husband was from Hong Kong, I think. Your Prabhupada disciple, I think, husband.
I know.
So then she was coming to Middle East and different countries they were going, and this painting was, they're selling the painting, that's very expensive, she was telling. But so many people, they are buying the painting, and they are able to recover the all the expenses, plus they are able to support the temple also. So, but here at that time is, she was telling that whatever material desire we have, Krishna fulfills. But as today's the topic, you are telling that it's not necessary that he will fulfill the desire, material desire. So it's just contradictory how the Miss Krishna, now as she's telling that Krishna, even if we have material desire, that fulfill. That's the practical example. And even the Bali Maharaj now, as Krishna given him the better than the Swarg Loka, Sutala Loka. But as you are telling, this depend upon Krishna, whether he will fulfill the material desires or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to Krishna what he gives us or doesn't give us. It's not, the material aspect is not so important, whether he fulfills our material desires or not. It depends if those material desires are going to be obstacles in our service to Krishna. Also, you know, if Krishna won't give us something that's going to take us away from him. If there's some desire that can be utilized in his service, you know, then you know that Krishna may desire. It's up to him. You know? We can't expect or demand anything. Sometimes he takes things away, sometimes he gives things. Prabhupada had that experience. Krishna was taking everything away, and later on, Krishna gave everything back. Bali Maharaj, everything was taken away, Krishna gave back. But we can't expect. If you see the life of the Pandavas, they went through so much repeated trials. Even Bhishma was amazed. How is it that you know, these Pandavas, they're such great personalities, how is it they're put into so much difficulty? You know, it wasn't just one time. Bali Maharaj is one test, severe test, but just once. Maybe it took a couple of hours. But Pandavas, so many years they were living in the forest in difficult condition, and they're a personal friend of Krishna. So from external vision it looks like, you know, they're not being taken care of. Sometimes that doubt is there, that you worship Lord Shiva, become very rich. The people worship Lord Vishnu, they become poor. Krishna is Hari, takes things away. So we can't really always understand the plan of the Lord. But whatever he gives us or takes from us, we have to accept that. So he may fulfill our material desires, he may not. It depends if it's going to help us in our devotional service or can be utilized in our devotional service.
But Father, new people who are supposed to whom we are preaching, the new fights, they are coming. So we are giving them example that whatever material desires are there, you have, that will be fulfilled when the day when you tell Krishna, I don't want anything, I want only your devotion, your pure bhakti. Then Krishna, I mean, it's not necessary that he will fulfill, or just necessary he will fulfill. How do we convince them?
Well, we shouldn't be convincing people to worship Krishna for material motives. Maybe they're already worshipping some demigod. So then we say, okay, better you worship Krishna. Because Krishna will give you, worshipping Krishna will give you spiritual benefit also. If you're simply worshipping demigod for money, you may get the money, but you won't get any spiritual benefit. So worship Krishna. Akama sarva kama va moksha karma dadi. Whoever it is, whatever you want, best approach Krishna. And Krishna, as in Chaitanya Charitamrita, even there's a description that Krishna says, why should I give this fool what he wants? There's some verses,
yes,
Krishna speaking
yes,
like that.
Yes, yes, I think.
You know, if this thing is going to make him averse to me, why should I give that to him? If someone, Krishna actually feels this person is my devotee, he's not going to give something to distract him from his devotional service. Rather he may take away so the devotee is more dependent on him. So I think we have to be a little bit careful in our preaching. We don't want to encourage people to worship Krishna for material reasons. If they're already materialistic, we can say, okay, you worship Krishna, he'll fulfill your desire. But we have to know that Krishna's real blessing is not some money or some property. The real blessing is Krishna himself, you know, and the devotion to the Lord. Because that's what the pure devotees are praying for. They're not praying for any material things. So we have to try to to give the real message. Not, maybe in the beginning we may attract someone with something like that, but once they become interested in Krishna, then material desires shouldn't be so important anymore.
Thank you.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki
Jai.
Prabhupada ki Prabhupada Premanandi.